Kia ora koutou. Welcome to the last day of April. Yes, yes, already last day of April. The year's flying by so fast, blah, 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 so on and so forth. What the last day of April actually does mean is that tomorrow, the 1st of May, is the start of New Zealand Music Month. So if you want to win some extra cool points with your friends and your colleagues, make sure you bust out that New Zealand Music Month t-shirt you bought 10 years ago. I know I've got one. Does it fit anymore? We'll find out tomorrow. And try to drop 660 into the conversation as often as humanly possible. Anyway, don't forget your roots, my friend. Kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Jess, and this is what's worth talking about. Winston Peters will apparently clarify New Zealand's position on the Defence Pact AUKUS tomorrow. But what is it all about, and what could getting more involved in it mean for our country? A coroner's inquest is opened into the death of a gore toddler who drowned in oxidation ponds 5 years ago. We have the background to this confusing tragedy. Plus, is your doctor female? Good news, you may be less likely to die. And why it's getting harder to prove you're not a robot. All that coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
The word AUKUS has been hitting headlines recently as the coalition government shows increasing interest in the non-nuclear part of the Defence Pact. AUKUS is a security deal between Australia, the UK and the United States with a focus on strategic defence in the Indo-Pacific region, with experts saying it's to combat China's military expansion in the area. But New Zealand's exact position has been unclear, something the Foreign Minister, Winston Peters, might clear up in a speech to the Institute of International Affairs tomorrow. But what could getting involved in this pact mean for New Zealand? Well, joining us now to unpack it all is Marco de Jong, a Pacific historian and law lecturer at Auckland University of Technology. Kia ora, Marco. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you start from the very beginning? What is AUKUS?
Kia ora, Jess. Announced in September of 2021, AUKUS is a security pact that involves Australia, the United Kingdom, the United States. As you mentioned, its objective is to maintain the US's military primacy and contain China in the Indo-Pacific region. AUKUS is often talked about as comprising two pillars. AUKUS Pillar 1 centres around the Australian acquisition of nuclear-powered submarines. AUKUS Pillar 2, which is the one that we talk about here in New Zealand, involves developing advanced military technology. And that's really to win the next generation arms race that's being shaped by things like autonomous weapons platforms, new electronic warfare capabilities and hypersonic missiles. So it's a big pact. It's all to do with new military tech, and New Zealand is courting involvement.
It's just really trying to future gaze and prevent, well, at least get ahead of what could be coming in the future when it comes to weapons and military exercises.
Yeah, well, in order to contain China, AUKUS nations see it as kind of leveraging what they see as an asymmetric advantage, which is their alliance structures. And AUKUS is a way to collaborate and coordinate approaches to new military acquisitions. So that they're trying to fuse the military industrial bases of the Anglosphere in accordance with the kind of US overall defense strategy, which is known as integrated deterrence, which is about leveraging all aspects of national power across what's known as the combat spectrum, from, you know, trade warfare and proxy wars, and all the way up to full-blown nuclear conflict.
So what does China think of all this? Because it doesn't sound like anyone's making any secret about what this alliance's main goal is.
China's very clear that they believe AUKUS comes from a Cold War mentality, and this has a lot of implications. You know, for New Zealand, China is a major trading partner, and to date, New Zealand hasn't adopted the same threat assessment of China that other AUKUS partners have. Joining AUKUS would draw us closer to that threat assessment, and that has a lot of implications if there were to be some form of conflict, heaven forbid.
It sounds like there's a lot of things to weigh up if we were to join this agreement. Why would we consider joining it?
There are a lot of things to weigh up. I have called it a generational foreign policy decision because the likely costs and obligations involved mean that it could largely determine New Zealand's approach to increased strategic conflict, especially in the Pacific region. This pact engages all aspects of our defence, our diplomacy and our national security. It's really important because it could impact, you know, who our friends and our enemies are, who we trade with, the shape and priorities of our military, where our aid spend goes, and for me, support for Pacific priorities like climate action or the South Pacific nuclear free zone. And as we've been discussing, if there are further conflicts, it could determine whether we fight or not.
Exactly. So has there been a change of position between the changes of government that we've just had?
There has been. My contention is that the coalition government is attempting to substitute bipartisanship by suggesting that they are simply carrying on with the exploration that the previous government did. But if we look at the official statements and the comments by ministers, we see that under the previous Labor government, New Zealand was kind of, quote, exploring what AUKUS Pillar 2 might mean or offer to New Zealand on a no-commitments basis, whereas the current coalition government is exploring how New Zealand can participate in AUKUS. So there has been an escalation both in the official advice and the statements of ministers.
Judith Collins said recently that this idea that we would have to pay our way, does that kind of point towards what you were mentioning there and the fact that we would need to offer actually some kind of contribution that we're not offering now if we are going to be part of this, and that's going to come with consequences?
We're talking about a significant increase in military spending, irrespective, I think. I think New Zealand currently commits about 1.5-1.6% of our GDP to military spending, which is not peanuts. You know, I think under AUKUS, potentially, we would be contributing up to $7 billion a year on our military, which would be in line with the kind of NATO and AUKUS standards of 2% of GDP. There's a question about whether these advanced capabilities are fit for purpose for New Zealand, or whether the type of military that is described under AUKUS, which is this kind of high-tech, interoperable expeditionary force that's designed to complement US forward power projection far from New Zealand shores, is actually in New Zealand's interest, as opposed to what we've seen for the, you know, living memory, which is a kind of more low-tech, dual civilian use capable kind of New Zealand realm-focused force.
Well, all eyes on Wednesday and Winston Peters' speech in relation to this. That's Marcus Young, a Pacific historian and law lecturer at Auckland University of Technology. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
I have for you the results of yesterday's poll about whether King Charles has had a successful first year as monarch. The results, yes, 63% of you said yes, he has, compared to 37% of you that said no. So onwards and upwards for King Charles, who is set to make his return to royal duties tomorrow, New Zealand time. Good luck to him with that. And a quick reminder, if you ever want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email, newsable@stuff.co.nz. A coroner's inquest into the death of three-year-old Lockie Jones began yesterday in Invercargill. The body of the Gore toddler was found in oxidation ponds just over a kilometre from his mum's house in January 2019. A police investigation determined that Lachlan drowned with no evidence of criminal activity. However, Lockie's father, Paul Jones, believes his child was murdered. So to talk us through the background of this case and what happened at the inquest yesterday, I'm joined by Southland Times editor Shay Baker. Kia ora, Shay. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, Jess. No problem.
The path to this inquest, Shay, I think it's fair to say, has been far from straightforward, hasn't it? Can you kind of talk to us about how we got here 5 years on?
Yes. So what has happened was that it was quickly concluded that Lockie Jones died in the oxidation ponds. Police, they finalised their investigation, but Lockie's father, Paul Jones, was not happy with that decision. What has happened in that time is that the case had to be reinvestigated twice. The police did come out and say that they'd missed some steps in the initial investigation. So initially, it would have just been a little bit more of a cut and dry case that Lockie drowned, but with the pushing of his dad, who was unhappy with that outcome, has led to this coroner's hearing being held.
Just to go through a little bit of the background of the case, Shay, and obviously readers can read about that on Stuff in the Southland Times, Lockie's dad wasn't with Lockie that night, was he? So him and his mum have different accounts of what may have gone down.
Yes, so Lockie was in his mother's care at the time, so his parents have separated. So Paul went to the house later on, from my understanding, when he found out that the child was missing. However, they do not live together.
So, Shay, we know the police investigation said there was no evidence of criminal activity. Even the subsequent ones found that. So what is the coroner actually tasked with determining in this inquest?
Yes, well, it's quite interesting. So in this inquest, the coroner is there to help determine whether the pathologist who carried out the post-mortem was correct to conclude that he died from drowning. The circumstances that led to him being found in the pond, because we know that Lockie's dad, Paul, has some questions around his body being found in the water and He's saying that there was no cuts on his feet and that would have happened if he had walked out along that scrubland where he did by the oxidation ponds for about 1.2 kilometres. And just whether there may have been circumstances to his death that were things such as neglect or if anybody else was involved. So the coroner has come out and said that this is some of the stuff that they are looking for while they are doing this case. He did say that there are questions that are to be asked here. He did say that this is a fact-finding exercise. So the inquest is to answer some of these questions that people feel like they may not have had answered.
I appreciate your time, Shay. That is Shay Baker, Southland Times editor. And of course, if you are interested in this case, stay across the updates on stuff.co.nz and the Southland Times. Oh, I don't know about you, but there is nothing that makes me feel quite as stupid in my day than failing those online tests where you have to prove that you're not a robot. And coming up in a moment, the bad news for people like me and maybe others out there who struggle to pick out the traffic lights and the motorcycles, those tests are about to get harder. Now, to make sure you're always up to date with upcoming tests for your intelligence, make sure you give Newsable a like and a follow, and all the answers will magically drop into your podcast feed. Now, we're all pretty grateful to get any kind of medical treatment when you're feeling a bit unwell or maybe in pain. But some research out of Japan is suggesting you might actually do better if you're treated by a female doctor. A study published in the Annals of Internal Medicine found older patients treated by female physicians had a lower chance of dying or being readmitted to hospital. So what on earth is going on? Well, we have producer Philippa here to talk us through the findings. I mean, Philippa, this sounds intriguing and maybe a bit concerning if you're a male doctor. How did the researchers come to this conclusion?
So look, this is a study that comes out of both Japan and the United States, and it involved the medical records of 700,000 patients over the age of 65. So that's an awful lot of people that are involved there. And the researchers, by comparing the outcomes depending on the gender of your doctor, they found that the patients generally did better if they had a female for their doctor. And for female patients, those results were even more noticeable.
So what do they think is going on here?
Well, the researchers think maybe a couple of things are going on here. Male doctors may be underestimating how unwell female patients actually are. And female doctors may be a bit more patient-centred in their work, and they might be better communicators. And of course, there's always a factor that women might prefer being treated by a woman. The patients themselves, they might be more open with a female doctor. So it may not be the male doctor's fault if they're not being told everything that patients are telling to a female doctor. And those patients, they might also be a bit less embarrassed. And of course, as we know, for some cultures, being treated by a male is quite problematic. So having a female doctor helps overcome social taboos, especially when it comes to sensitive examinations. So to be fair, the female doctors might be being given a bit more information.
Potentially. Do we know if it's reflected in any way back here, those results?
Well, look, as I said, the patients that were studied for this research, they were in Japan and the US, so there aren't any direct parallels when it comes to research. But there probably are some factors, such as better communication between doctors and patients. That seems likely to be a bit of a common factor across all treatment, no matter where you are. So you'd hope that here we have great communication, so there isn't a difference.
Thanks, Philippa. That is food for thought next time you book a doctor's appointment.
Kia ora, I'm Adam Blair. I played the great game of rugby league for the Storm, Tigers, Broncos and the Mighty Warriors.
And I'm Goran Paladin, sports presenter and rugby league fanatic.
I won a World Cup too. I played 51 tests for New Zealand.
Yeah, he's a national treasure, people. Come on. Blairy and I, we're joining forces for a brand new rugby league podcast called League of Our Own.
Each week we talk Kiwis across the NRL and of course everything Waz.
All the big names, the big stories.
And some of my own stories too.
Well, if we can make them fit.
We'll make time.
Okay. League of Our Own with Blairy and Goran, proudly brought to you by Snap Rentals.
You can listen through stuff.co.nz or wherever you get your podcast.
Mate, your stories are way too long, eh?
Nah, we've got to take them on a journey.
Oh, the journey. Yeah, of course.
Okay, I've got some good news to finish today's episode. It's not just you. Those little tests that pop up online when you click I am not a robot, they are getting harder. It's a big sigh of relief on my end as it takes me at least three goes to prove that I know what a motorbike looks like. In fact, I think sometimes the website just feels sorry for me and lets me through after the few attempts of trying to pick out those traffic lights. But why? Captchas, to give them, you know, their official name, getting harder. Well, the same reason that we can blame so many of the world's ills on AI, of course. So since captchas were launched in way back in the year 2000, bots have become much, much smarter. Researchers at the University of California, Irvine, recently found that bots could consistently answer the captchas that showed the distorted text box with almost 100% accuracy. And with the advancement in AI, bots can now identify images, including traffic lights, bridges, and other things that us humans are asked to find in those pictures. So, what could be coming next? Well, to try and outsmart the robots again, captchas are moving to puzzles. Now, don't be put off. We're not talking about a Wordle or a Sudoku or a cryptic crossword or anything like that. These ones, they do sound achievable. Let me give you an example. So, a puzzle might feature something like a picture of a wild animal, but that wild animal would be dressed in human clothes, and rather than being in its natural habitat in nature, that animal might be floating around with some watermelons. So just truly bizarre stuff to try and throw the AI off. And then the request for the human might be to click on the animal's bow tie, something that we should be able to do as mere mortals, perhaps. But perhaps more difficult for the robot when they've got so many different images out of context. So good luck to us. It sounds like the robo apocalypse might be averted, at least for now. That is Newsable for today. I'm Jessica McCarthy. Ka kitea pōpō.
Was this episode of Newsable usable? Then back NZ News by making a financial contribution at stuff.co.nz/support.
It appeared that a vehicle may have gone over the 80-metre cliff into the sea.
There have been no bodies found despite considerable debris being washed ashore.
9 years ago, a man named John Beckenridge abducted his stepson, Mike Zhao Beckenridge. Soon afterwards, they vanished. Nearly a decade later, there is still no sign of Mike or John and no agreement about their fate.
The family believe that they are residing overseas under new identities.
The court should find that sadly Mike and John Beckenridge have died as a result of the vehicle being driven off the cliff.
Now, a new investigation is trying to find out what happened to them.
From Stuff Audio and the Press newspaper, this is The Lost Boy, the disappearance of Mike Zhao Beckenridge. Listen on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.